Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone. This is America's Great Loop Cruisers Association weekly blog radio. With us today is Beth McHugh, who is our marketing director and coordinator. She takes care of our webpage, and the rendezvous wouldn't happen without Beth. So, Beth, welcome.
I'd like
to acknowledge our admiral sponsors that are just invaluable to AGLCA. We have Curtis Stokes and Associates, Dog River Marina and Boat Works, Dozier's Regatta Point Yachting Center, Dozier's Waterway Guide Magazine, and Skipper Bob Publications. For those non-members out there who may be listening to our show, the Great Loop is the continuous waterway that includes the eastern portion of North America, the Atlantic and Gulf Intracoastal Waterways, the Great Lakes, the Heritage Canals, and the inland rivers of America's heartland. AGLCA, as we call ourselves, is an organization of people who share the sense of adventure and curiosity. Our association's primary purpose is to disseminate information and enhance the overall experience for those learning about, dreaming of, and exploring and cruising America's Great Loop. Our website is www.greatloop.org, and we'd love for you to become a member. I'm really happy to tell you that our guest host this week is Joe Pica. Joe has completed the loop more than once, and today he's going to tell us about a less-traveled side trip, the Ohio River, and the many rivers that encompass the Ohio. If anyone has any questions or comments for Joe during the show, please feel free to call into our toll-free line. The number is 877-497-1815. Joe, where do you begin with your trip up the Ohio?
Well, I think, first of all, hello and thank you, Janice. The first aspect is, why would anybody do it? No one does the Ohio River, which is what we all thought, and started looking into it and couldn't find a bunch of information. But three loopers decided loosely to do this trip as an adventure. Obviously, this is a major artery for the country of history and commerce, so we didn't feel like we were going into the Amazon or anything. And anybody contemplating this trip, it's eminently doable. If you can do the distance from St. Louis to Green Turtle with your fuel capacity, you can do the Ohio River without a problem. First of all, why cruise the Ohio River? All of us that have done the loop probably have a pretty bad impression of that one lower section of the Ohio River that runs from Cairo all the way up to Smithfield Lock and Dam. And that is with, that has good reasons or foundations. There's nothing there for recreational boats, pleasure boats. It's a major commercial site with fleeting areas of barges and tows all hither and yon and service centers. So it's nothing pleasant. And plus you have Lock 52 and 53 that are always backed up, and you have to either spend the night on the hook on the Kentucky side while you wait for your turn in the queue. But the contrast is incredible. After you pass Paducah and the mouth of the Cumberland River, you see the Smithfield Lock and Dam, and the Smithfield Lock and Dam marks the true nature of the Ohio, as I would like to describe it. Once you come through that lock and dam, it's like somebody threw a switch. You're in this beautiful, bucolic scenery. It's amazing, the contrast. And as you work your way up the river, you're offered a huge menu of opportunities for places to stop and stay. The three of us assumed that we would be anchoring out all the time.
Excuse me, Joe, were you on three different boats, or did you all travel together on one vessel?
No, there were three different vessels.
Okay.
Young America, Lazy Dolphin, and the Carolyn Ann Mine. And we were, as per our nature when we cruise loosely together. Most people do this. You're not wedded at the hip.
Right.
You generally make your own schedule and your own timing, and we just happen to be the first boat up the river, and then everybody kind of collects together at strategic locations, compares notes, and enjoys each other's company. But that way nobody gets their feelings hurt if you get up in the morning and leave early or don't want to stay longer or something. There isn't any pressure, and I think it's the best way to cruise. But
that's a great way.
Going back to the Ohio, what a boater will find when they go up the Ohio is it's 981 miles long. It's got about 20 locks on it. And the locks are all the big commercial locks that you're familiar with the bollards that you lasso in the chamber and you have an easy ride up and down, with the exception of the last two locks. But once again, going back to what a boater will find, they will find that the entire Ohio River is littered, that's not a proper term, it's sprinkled with wonderful little towns and villages and moderate-sized cities and large cities. And the irony is almost all of them have a dock, and most are free right in their heart. So you as a boater will find that, yeah, there's abundant anchorages. You can find anchorages all over the place on the Ohio. It's basically a wide, well-marked, deep river. And you can get out of the way of the tows, so it's not a question of being unsafe when you anchor. But these towns offer a place to stop the boat, step off the boat, and go into town and visit and enjoy whatever amenities or attractions that appeal to the individual that's stopping there. And I can honestly tell you, we didn't even have time to stop at them all.
Really?
Other
marinas,
there are,
they're basically just town docks.
They're town docks. Some of them offer services. Some of them don't.
Mm-hmm.
All of them are free. And once again, this is the Ohio River is a living river, so if it floods, certain amenities may not be there the next year unless they're replaced. So should one decide to cruise the Ohio, and this is not a difficult or what you would call a great adventure, although it was a personal adventure for all of us, it wasn't adventuresome. I don't know if that truly defines the nature of this cruise. You will find marinas, you will find town docks, you will find plenty of anchorages. Most of all, the boater will find tremendous opportunities for doing what I call Q-tip touristing, which I am.
And what is that?
Museums, local attractions such as historical sites.
Uh-huh.
And you've got to remember that the Ohio River was the key. Well, it was Lewis and Clark, obviously. You're traveling the same riverbed that Lewis and Clark traveled. And you're exploring the history, the early history of the United States with before the Northwest Territories and then the establishment of the Northwest Territories back in the 1700s. So this is a very, very historically rich venue. And it's called the Heartland or the Heartland Rivers for a very good reason. We've become very, very charmed, and most people are, by the Western Rivers, in the fact that people are so very, very friendly. They're warm and welcoming. There's a rich texture to the rivers that offers something to everybody that cruises it as an attraction. I can't get over it. And let me just say that my accountant, my CFO on the boat, Admiral Punk, determined this is the least expensive cruising we've ever done.
Is it? But because of all the free docks in the cities or the towns?
Yes. Now, you're going to be on your own for services in most cases.
Uh-huh.
You will not have power, so you have to provide your own power. Most of us have generators, and you do that. Or if you want to go to a marina, and quite frankly, most of the marinas are not in the center of the city, so you're better off going to the center of the city if that's where you want to be.
Uh-huh.
Where you can walk to most of the venues. And let's bring up that point. You can basically hopscotch from town to town on a day-to-day, on a day cruise basis at a trawler speed. Now, we went in a drought year, so that was last year. And the worst adverse current that was experienced was maybe a knot, and that was right before you got to the dam and locked, approaching it from the bottom.
Well, that sounds pretty calm.
Up, yeah, after you locked up, it was dead calm.
Uh-huh.
Of course, the question remains, what happens if it rains and you get a flush? Well, there are plenty of places you can duck in and hide, and the reporting and the recording and the core and the geodesic surveys sites give tremendous information about the datum, the flow, or whether they're going to release water or anything. So those are all resources that a boater wants to tap into to feel confident and comfortable about the conditions that are going to be experienced during certain weather events so they can plan to be where they want.
Uh-huh.
Of course, the ultimate escape here is that you can always turn around and go back downstream, and then you've got a current kicking you. But trust me, I don't think that necessarily needs to be done unless there's something major that happens.
Mm-hmm.
This is the heartland of America, and there are many, many places to see, hide, experience, enjoy, and you're in civilization, even though it may not look like it from the boat because of the bucolic scenery that continually unrolls in front of the boater as they continue upstream. It's just a wonderful trip.
What kind of nature did you see? Or were there a lot of birds, and are there a lot of fish that are interesting to look at? I mean, what can we expect?
Well, as far as Mother Nature is concerned, you're in a lot of heavily forested, high-rolling hills, and anything that's associated with that style of agriculture is evident. You've got deer, raccoons, even bear. You've got eagles. So you've got all the normal stuff, ducks, geese, this kind of flora and fauna. It's hardwoods, not necessarily pine.
Uh-huh.
And let's go back to the cities, because the cities are really, you can enjoy nature anywhere, but the cities are the unique characteristic within the river valley. And I'm going to pick the three biggest that you're going to experience. St. Louis first on your way up. St. Louis has two sets of floating city concrete docks with water and power for free.
I don't think I've heard of anywhere with floating docks with facilities. That's amazing.
Yes, it was quite a pleasant surprise.
Uh-huh.
So all you do is call them and let them know you're there, and they'd say, well, enjoy your stay in St. Louis. So this is a wonderful, wonderful opportunity, and the area of St. Louis is a wonderful visit. You can go to, of course, Churchill Downs and enjoy that fabulous place. And Enterprise is always evident at all these stops where you can call for a rental car to be delivered to you, and you can really use the location as a key way to explore the entire area beyond what you could bike or walk. So the next major city going up the Ohio is Cincinnati. Cincinnati, which is, we've come to find out, called Porkopolis, was a fabulous visiting city. We were able, and there is a serpentine wall between the people bridges, and you've heard of it called the rainbow bridges or the purple people bridges. There's a serpentine wall that at normal pool level you can tie right up to it for free in the heart of Cincinnati, and then that will gain the boater access to all the attractions in the city for biking, right next to the ball field, the Cincinnati Reds, if you want to catch baseball. I mean, there's all sorts of things going on. And beyond that, mile zero is the point in Pittsburgh. Now, Pittsburgh is where the Monongahela River and the Allegheny River meet the origins and become the Ohio River, hence the term Three Rivers. You can tie up to the point for free, Hines Field Wall for free, so you can literally dock in the heart of Pittsburgh and enjoy what a fabulous city Pittsburgh has become. It's truly a renaissance city. You can go to up the Monongahela just across from the point, and there's a venue there that's called Station Square, and they took a major transportation hub and turned it into cutesy shops, bars, restaurants, and also it has a place where you can catch the metro, their equivalent of a subway, buses, and also take the inclines up the mountains that overlook Pittsburgh, called the funiculars. All of that, by the way, if you have a red, white, and blue Medicare card is free on their transportation.
Joe, I think we need to break quickly for a commercial before we finish up with Pittsburgh. Beth, who was that commercial today?
I think Green Turtle Bay.
Okay, are we ready?
Is that correct? Yep.
Thank you.
Green Turtle Bay Marina and Resort has consistently been voted a must-stop by loopers. It has earned the coveted five-anchor designation from Quimby's Cruising Guide. This full-service marina features over 450 slips. They are located at mile marker 31.5 on the scenic Cumberland River. Green Turtle Bay is a proud commander sponsor of AGLCA, so join them and find your waterway of life.
Thank you, Beth. Joe, did you have a favorite city that you would recommend? Are they all pretty spectacular?
They all had their individual attractions. Depending upon what your desire is would determine that. And We were not able to experience all of them, but we tried our hardest. Once you get to Pittsburgh, you also have an option. You can go up the Allegheny River, which we did for a while. But most of the locks on the upper Allegheny are closed, so you can't do the entire Allegheny River. And back to Station Square in Pittsburgh, if you want to go to a marina with services, water and power, they charge $25 a night, and they're only open for four nights. The other three nights, you're not charged for. So that's pretty inexpensive, and these are floating concrete docks with power and water right in the heart of Pittsburgh. So if you want utilities, you have it. And that is the Monongahela, and that brings up another side trip with this entire trip. You can go up the Monongahela all the way to where it ends at Fairmont, West Virginia. And that is the highest place you can gain from sea by boat in North America. It's not Lake Balsam on the Trent Severn, in contrast to a lot of publications. Lake Balsam is 846 or so feet above sea level. Fairmont, West Virginia is 867, and that's the junction of the West Fork and the Tigard River. So you can literally get to the highest point in North America, and that's still in the U.S. However, they have, because of traffic, and these are all the kind of things that you need to investigate. This is a normal course of cruising. You need to make sure that the locks are operational, that the core, because of sequestration, didn't close a lock because of it's a less priority lock. And they've done that for the last three locks on the Monongahela. Now, even if those last three locks are closed on the Monongahela, you can still go to Morgantown, West Virginia, which offers a free dock with water and power in the heart of Morgantown, where the University of West Virginia is, the Mountaineers. However, the Corps during the peak boating season is offering limited hours through those locks. If you want to take a day trip and literally go to the end of the Monongahela through these beautiful West Virginia mountains, you can also dip your toe into the Cheat River, which is right off the Monongahela. But going back to Pittsburgh and continuing back south, there's another side river trip that's really worth doing, and that is the Great Kanawha River. It's kind of spelled Kanawha, but everybody pronounces it simply the Kanawha. And that travels up to Charleston, West Virginia, which is the capital of West Virginia, which also offers a huge levee wall for you to free tie up as a boater, and they roll out these big panels with electrical hookups that you can plug into. I didn't see any water available there, but there's water available in other places. And that's a great visit. Charleston has this huge, iconic Capitol Dome and museums. Once again, all of these little towns have their own flavor and their own niche in history and offer their own glimpse of what they their role and experience in history in our development of our country was and is. And from Charleston, you can continue up the Kanawha River to where it ends. It becomes the new river out of the Carolinas. Well, obviously, once you get to that point, there's a railroad bridge where it ceases to be called the Kanawha, now is named the New River, which is the New River Gorge you see in all the famous pictures. And you're not going to go up there because there's nothing but rocks. But you can hit to that point and come back down. And it's a beautiful run through these tabernacle-like high hill mountains as you twist and turn your way up the river with minimal current.
Is there a guidebook that you would recommend for these rivers, Joe?
Well, that was problematic. We gathered every guidebook we could find, and the guidebooks that we used were Quimby's Cruising Guide, the Ohio River by Captain Rick Rhodes, the Ohio River Guidebook by Jerry M. Haig, and then, of course, all the associated U.S. Corps of Engineer charts. The problem with all these guidebooks is they were dated. The information in some of them was wrong, and that brings up another topic. If you do this as you would any cruising, you have to call ahead and verify that if there is a marina listed, it still exists, still open through the economic times, whether or not they offer diesel or not, or gas, whatever your desire is, and whether they can accommodate you. That's just protocol for cruising anywhere, and you do that certainly on the Ohio. As far as anchorages are concerned, that's where the biggest problem came into play. The guidebooks represented anchoring areas. However, they weren't the type of anchoring that you would associate with a displacement hull cruiser, power cruising boat. They're mostly for small ski boats, excursion boats, trailable boats. So obviously they're not going nearly as much. However, we were able to make contact with a lovely couple up in the middle of the Ohio River in Indiana that actually cruised in a 34-foot trawler, and that draws a little over 4 feet. And they had done an incredibly extensive cruising guide, and that became our Bible and the most reliable resource for us, albeit dated as well, because it was already 7 years old, the data in it. But it was great, and they did a phenomenal job, and they're great. It's Paul and Marty McGraw. I give credit to them and thank them immensely for what they did to help us through this trip. And really, really enjoy it. So everything, there are those guidebooks, but you have to verify that resources that are listed in the guidebook still exist, that the anchorages are accurate that are depicted in these guidebooks that may not be still valid. For instance, there was one at Slim Island, and it was stated that this was a very, very good anchorage, but the tows had come around and changed the primary route because the river had decided it wanted to be deeper there. So you were going to anchor right in the middle of the main channel of all the tug traffic. Well, obviously that's a verboten. You're not going to do that. And that brings up a subject for tugs and tows. A lot of people are intimidated by the tugs and tows that are operating up and down these rivers, which are incredibly prodigious in number and size. However, they're incredibly professional, and if you engage them, they are most helpful. And having AIS is certainly a huge help on the rivers, and if you have a transponder, they'll normally contact you. And they're professionals. You can rely on what they tell you, and you can rely on them to do the correct thing and guide you correctly. And charming they are. one fellow raised us on the radio because he wanted to chat up the boat, and because they run this all the time, so we're an unusual commodity. And he said, Sonny, I always call you Sonny. Now, we don't see a lot of you all out. And if you get in trouble, you raise us. You understand? We'll help you out. Don't think we won't. Not just me. I'm talking about any of us.
Oh, isn't that fantastic?
So, yeah, it was very, very charming and nice and reassuring. But they're great. You don't have to worry about them at all.
So you would recommend AIS then?
Yes, I highly recommend the AIS, minimally an AIS receiver. And a transponder helps because there's a lot of controversy. Some people say they don't want to clutter up the screens, but they've become so sophisticated now that they're a real asset. You can filter things out. The key is that the AIS receivers that we all cruise with only are showing us the line of sight distance to the whatever the target is and time of the closest point of approach, but not the actual point of approach by the contour of the channel or the waterway. If you're in a big, heavy, oxbow, bow tie looking twisty river, you may be only 100 yards from the tug, but you're 3 miles on the water. The tows all have, and here's the benefit of the transponder, the tows that are operating on the Heartland Rivers, almost 99% of them, are employing a very sophisticated software, kind of pricey, we're not going to get it, unless you've got long pockets, that actually calculates the meeting place on the contour of the sailing line. Not just straight line by the crow flies, but by starting out with the actual sailing line or the channel of the waterway. And it tells them exactly at what point they're going to meet that target so they can either negotiate or adjust so that two big toes or you don't meet them in some real tight bend where they have to flank the entire channel. So it's just an asset. And they'll raise you because their antennas and the receivers are more sensitive than ours.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll raise you before you even see them and say...
Even.
Yeah,
well, Joe, we're just about out of time. Is there any highlight you'd like to tell us about or something that you really recommend we not miss if we take this trip?
The entire trip. It has so many highlights. It would really take a show for each one to get into them if you really wanted to do a travel guide style. The key point is... it's eminently doable. Why people don't do it, I don't know, after having done it. But I was one of those people that said, oh, nobody does the Ohio. Why would I do the Ohio River? Nobody does the Ohio. But after having done it, and all three of us will tell you that did it last summer, it was the best cruise we've ever experienced.
Really?
Bar none.
Beautiful.
It's that good. And I got a quick... synopsis of the river, at least their cruise distance was around, by doing the Allegheny, the Kanawha, and the Monongahela, was a little over 2,378 miles or 66 locks. We only anchored 4 days total.
Really?
We spent 52 days on a free dock. We spent 59 days on a pay for a dock at a total cost of $1,286. That's not much. That's, when you do the math, that's minimal. Engine hours,
amazing.
348, gen set hours, 74. We use maybe $2,400 in fuel. And the guidebooks I've already specified. But should anybody want to look at it a little bit better, they can either contact you, contact me. I'm listed in the AGLCA catalog and membership. So if anybody's interested in it, I'm a proponent, and I'll be a member of the Chamber of Commerce for all these fantastic towns, not the least of which was Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Louisville, then you got Madison, Maysville, Portsmouth, Gallipolis, Point Pleasant, Marietta, Wheeling, West Virginia, Henderson, you know, it's just on and on and on, all these wonderful little venues and towns.
Well, thank you, Joe. This has been tremendously interesting. Thank you all for all you do in the discussion forum. I know you're one of our most frequent posters, and we really, really appreciate all the advice. And Evelyn, we will see you next week. And Joe, again, thank you very much, and have a great week. Thanks, Beth.
You too.
Okay, bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.